question?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are the different forms of the Lord in transcendence and also in the material world? So this is the answer here, text 33, of which we have two translations, both by Srila Prabhupada. So text 33, Aham evasam eva agre nanyad yat sarasat param paschad aham yad etatscha yogasishyeta sosmiaham. So the one, he says, Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who is existing before the creation when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. None yet asat param. There was no cause, there was no effect. There was just me, aham. It begins with this word, aham. Paschad aham yad etatscha. Nor was there material nature to cause. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. Paschadaham yaritats, chayovisishyetas osmiaham. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. The alternative translation, a little shorter. Prior to the cosmic creation, only I exist and no phenomena exist, either gross, subtle, or primordial. After creation, only I exist in everything, and after annihilation, only I remain eternally. So three states, right? Before, during, and after. Before creation, during creation, and after creation. What's there? I. Period. Aham eva. Myself, and that's it, really. That's what he's saying. So the Mayavadis have a field day with this text, as Prabhupada points out. Because we'll get into that. But what Krishna is saying here, that's really what he said, this aham eva. Aham eva, evasam, eva, agre. Eva, certainly, indeed, for emphasis, I. But it's a little hard to be really impersonal with it because of the repetition of this word, aham, 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 which is called a personal pronoun. It's not the impersonal pronoun, but it's the personal pronoun. And we've just seen the description of the Lord's becoming enlightened, his seeing the Vaikuntha planets, the spiritual world is described as the transcendental world, and Krishna and Brahma are meeting face to face, and Krishna doesn't say, the point is, nothing exists, neither you nor I, but he says, aham, aham, aham. So that before this creation, there is I, this principle of I, personality. So right away, of course, the Mayavad philosophy is that the notion of I is really an artifact of Maya. So, but here, before there's any Maya, before there's any creation at all, sadasat param, superior to cause, all kinds of cause and effect. The mahatattva is the cause, the effect is all the things that were. Before any of that's there, I'm there, and me alone. During the creation, what you see, everything, is actually myself. And after it goes away, what's left is still myself. So this is the answer to the first question. There's a lot packed up in there. What are his forms in transcendence? So first let's just deal with Prabhupada's understanding of how he explains this idea, this nothing but I exists. Because the first thing we understand is before the creation, there's not only Krishna, but there's a whole Vaikuntha realm with other people. So what is this aham eva? Who are these other people? When Krishna says, I exist, and only I exist, and yet there's all these other people. So that's, first of all, let's understand that. If we turn to the purport of Well, let's look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita purport first. On page 52. Now, you see, we got this word here, you know, aham. So the Lord exists. So what is the Lord anyway that exists? What is this content of this aham? So here Prabhupada explained. The Lord indicates herein, you know where I'm reading? That before the material creation he existed in fullness with all transcendental opulences. So it wasn't that. So that's what he's saying. You know, he's saying there's three stages, but in all three of them I'm complete. I'm not diminished. It's not that, you know, I'm there fully. So therefore he has his opulences before. So what are those opulences? Strength, wealth, beauty, knowledge, fame, and renunciation. If one thinks of a king, he automatically thinks of his secretaries, ministers, military commanders, palaces, and so on. So part of the definition of this aham, when it refers to Krishna, means Krishna and everything that he has. You can't take Krishna out of the position of being God. And so if he's there in his supreme position, therefore he's got all those people subordinate to him. See, so you can't remove that Aishvarya, his royalship, his relationships. In other words, Krishna, what Krishna is constituted by these relationships. After all, he has names, right? Like Rohini Nandana, Yashoda Nandana. He's addressed with names that indicate relationships with his devotees. So part of what he is he has these relationships. So therefore, for him to be himself, also his associates also have to be there. So therefore, when it says, if one thinks of a king, he automatically thinks of his secretaries, ministers, military commanders, palaces, and so on. Since a king has such opulences, one can simply try to imagine the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the Lord says, aham, therefore, it is to be understood that he exists with full potency, including all opulences. So when you say the aham, you can't cut out all his opulences, which is the Vaikuntha realm, the servants there, Vrindavan, all of that. So all that goes along with the aham, that is Krishna. Does Krishna ever leave Vrindavan? No. Part of what it means to be Krishna means to have that kingdom of Vrindavan. So therefore, when Krishna says, I exist before the creation, that means that purport of that I is everything you know about Krishna and his transcendental relationships. That's what Prabhupada is saying here in this purport. Again, we see it. If you look in the Bhagavatam, page 182 and 183. Well, I can't get any more. But for those that have this version, well, of course, I'm into. I didn't. I'm next in the future. I'll remember the paragraphs. That's a good idea. One, two. You do it too, or do you have to go through a number each paragraph, and then we can have some references. One, two, three. Third paragraph, toward the end. The Vaikuntha Lokas. Therefore, the personality of Godhead exists before the creation, and he exists with all transcendental variegatedness in Vaikuntha Lokas. The Vaikuntha Lokas, also accepted in the Bhagavad Gita as being of the Sanatana nature, are not annihilated, even after the annihilation of material manifest cosmos. So before and after, the Vaikunthas are there. Those transcendental planets are of a different nature altogether. And that nature is not subjected to the rules and regulations of material creation, maintenance, or annihilation. The existing planets are of a different nature altogether. And that nature is not subjected to the rules and regulations of material creation, maintenance, or annihilation. The existence of the personality of Godhead implies the existence of the Vaikuntha Lokas, as the existence of a king implies the existence of a kingdom.
So when Krishna says I, and that means the king is automatically included. So the same point is being made here, but very succinctly. And then I think he comes back to it. No. Yeah, so that's that part, right? What is the I that exists? So that's Krishna and his variegatedness, right? He says aham. So let's take it at face value. That is the personal pronoun. And you don't have people except in relationship with other people anyway. So what we know about Krishna and who Krishna is and what the word Krishna means, that's the referent. I mean, here is somebody standing for Brahma and he's saying aham. So what is that? So that's the first part, right? That's what exists before the creation. Now, and after, before and after the same circumstances, really. So let's take this interesting middle period, but during the creation, where it's I alone. So Prabhupada also explains that. Let's start with the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Second to last paragraph of the purport. Now we're talking about during the creation. The material elements display the inferior energy of the Lord, and the living entities are his superior energy. Since the energy of the Lord is not different from him, in fact, everything that exists is Krishna in his impersonal feature. Sunshine, sunlight, and heat are not different from the sun, yet simultaneously they are distinct energies of the sun. Similarly, the cosmic manifestation and the living entities are energies of the Lord, and they are considered to be simultaneously one with and different from him. The Lord therefore says, I am everything. So that's contained in this verse. You see, when he says, during the creation I alone exist, he's saying, everything that you see, that is also I. On the basis of the fact that nothing is different from Krishna. As he says here, because everything is his energy and is therefore none different from him. So, again, Prabhupada makes the similar point in the Bhagavatam purport to this verse. If you have these pages, this is going to be hard to count up to the paragraphs. But on page 184, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe the fifth paragraph. The impersonalists adduce no activity in the Supreme. Then he has this sentence, the activities of Brahma and other demigods during the maintenance of the creation are to be understood as activities of the Lord. You see, again, they're part of the universal form. And when the demigods act, the Lord's universal form is moving. So they're actually Krishna's activities. Therefore, all the acts of the demigods can also be ascribed to the Lord. Somebody was once making the case to me that they thought that in the Bible, when creation is described, since they're the activities of Brahma, that the Jews were actually worshipping Brahma. And Jehovah was actually Brahma. But it's hard to say because you could attribute all those activities of creation to the Lord because he's the one that's doing it, so they're being discharged, you know. Just like if you say the president warned Cambodia. Well, he didn't. The ambassador went over there and did it, but the acts of the ambassador are acts of the president because he's acting in his place. So similarly, when the demigods at least acting in an authorized manner, their acts are acts of Krishna. So that's one place where Prabhupada makes his point, this during. And then if you go to the very end, uh, He says, there is no other cause of all causes than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. Therefore, this verse, Aham Eva, never indicates anything other than the Supreme Lord. I want you to therefore follow the path of the Brahma Sampradaya. And so then he says, the demigods like Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshvara, Indra, Chandra, and Varuna are undoubtedly different forms of the Lord for execution of different functions. The different elemental ingredients of material creation, as well as the multifarious energies, may also be of the same personality of Godhead, but the root of all of them is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So again, everything you see is really Krishna. This will be elaborated later on in the third of these verses, but here we see, for this part, as Prabhupada points out, is the philosophy of Achincha, Beda, Abeda, Tattva. Achincha means that you can't conceive it. It can't be conceived by the mind. And then Beda, Abeda, difference and non-difference. The relationship between the Lord, Beda means different, Abeda, and then Tattva, the principle or the truth or whatever, of Achincha. So what do we do with this Achincha Beda Beda Tattva if we can't understand it rationally? This is what we do. We try to see things in that way. And the way to do that, one way to do it anyway, is if you look at, if you have this purport to text 51. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is the purport to the prelude verse, there, Prabhupada explains Achincha Beda Beda Tattva in one sentence. In a sense, there is nothing but Sri Krishna, and yet nothing is Sri Krishna save and except his primeval personality. So there it is. Write this sentence down, or memorize it. There is nothing but Sri Krishna, yet nothing is Sri Krishna, save and except his primeval personality. And say it to yourself over and over again, just like a Zen Buddhist in his koan. There's another place, and the same, you can get another version of the same koan, if you want it. This is from the last purport in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, although superficially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity, material nature, and time appear to be different, nothing is different from the Supreme. But the Supreme is always different from everything. So there's a good one. Nothing is different from Krishna, but Krishna is different from everything. So just keep saying it. Nothing is different from Krishna, and Krishna is different from everything. And when you look around, you see something. You know, a tree, say, now, nothing is different from Krishna, but Krishna is different. And just, you know, work with it. Because it's a chincha. But it's a way of seeing. It's the way we see the world. And the only way we'll understand these verses properly is through a chincha beta beta tattva. And because the Mayavadis don't understand a chincha beta beta tattva, you'll see what they do to try to understand what Krishna is saying here, how they have to kind of devastate the whole meaning and take something that's very subtle and elusive and mysterious and bring it down to a lower level. Because here this verse is talking about oneness, but also about difference. You know, so that Krishna is there before, during, and after. But how is he there before? Aham, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means transcendental form. How is he there during? Well, he's also everything by virtue of nothing is different from him, and therefore there's a conception of the universal form. That universal form is the way that we can see all of material nature and all the demigods working as the different limbs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he has these two kinds of forms. is transcendental forms that exist before, during, and after the creation. Because during the creation, he doesn't lose his spiritual form. He just kind of manifests himself through this universal form also, through the agency of the demigods, through the material nature that works under their direction. And then afterwards, he's still full and complete in the Vaikuntha forms. Okay, so that's the purport to this aham, how he, Krishna, is there before, during, and after, and that's all that there is. That's all that there is. There's Krishna, there's this hum. But once you find out what it means, this aham, it implies person, person implies relationships, relationships imply other people, and so on. Now, what the Mayavadis try to do with this is another topic. I only. So they want to say, well, this means that, you see, they take off on this word, absolute.
Absolute.
Absolute, which means not relative, right? That means not related. Not related to anything else. No relatives. No mom, no pop, no friends, no relatives. Nothing you relate to. So therefore, one without a second. This common philosophical idea of the absolute, right? One without a second. Another one I'm not going to mind, but I'll do it. And besides which, so this is how they go. So you just start from the idea of this absolute. That besides which there is no other. These are definitions you can pull out of any elementary philosophy course, and that's how they think of it. So then when he says, I alone exist. Aha, there it is. But then what happens to the creation? He says here, before, during, and after. Well, what is this creation? There's Krishna and there's Krishna's creation. That means during the period of creation, there's something, a world, when all you see is I. Because if you really understand this idea of absolute, not relative or not related, then what happens to God and then a world? Usually, there's a creator and then he creates a world. And then he's got this world over against himself that he relates to in a certain way as the controller. These are relative terms, aren't they? Controller, supreme, God, Lord, Master, all these things. So they say, well, it's really not there. That there actually is no creation. That's the illusion, that there's a creation. But there is no creation. This is the Mayavad philosophy. Because they want to hold on to this absolute thing. So this is how they want to say there is no creation. And then therefore this principle of I means, there's no Brahma. There's no Krishna and there's no Brahma here either. That's not taking place. So they just wipe the whole thing out. And get rid of the aham, ultimately. On the interest of preserving this absolute aham, it disappears. Because there's no personal pronoun. There's no one speaking. Because if there's Brahma and there's Krishna, then there's duality, right? There's relativity. So this is the way the Mayavadis want to deal with this this verse, you see, so it's very unsubtle. It's very unsubtle. I want you to notice, however, the way that we deal with this con, because we accept that Krishna is the absolute. Even on these definitions, because, of course, absolute, as we understand, is defined as the ultimate source of all energies. That's also rejected by the Mayavadis because they deny the existence of the energies.
Shankaracharya says that he claims that the Shastra proclaims the unreality of all effects. He argues that God could not, creation could not emanate from him, because that means he would not be kutashta, unchanged, fixed up, kutashta. It would compromise his position if, in fact, the world emanated from him. And therefore, the effects are actually unreal. Now, there are places which describe Brahma as having, as the Lord who produces a world out of himself. Well, that's describing the Absolute as an object of ignorance or nescience. But when he's an object of knowledge, he's understood as one without a second, having no world, and all the effects disappear. They vanish when you're enlightened. And there's nothing but the Absolute. And the knower disappears, the thing known disappears, it all becomes one in the Absolute Truth. Right? This is the Mayavad philosophy, which all kinds of people pretend to believe in. I say pretend because if you really put it to them, you know, they hedge all the time when it comes to practical dealing. And they won't give you all their money, you know, all those things. You know, they say that the world doesn't exist, but then they try to enjoy it anyway. But anyway, we accept. I said one without a second. Yes, there's nothing but Sri Krishna. He is one without a second. That is the Absolute. He is that besides which there's no other, because there's Krishna and Krishna's energies. And in one sense, they're none different. So these things, these are true. Outside of Krishna, there's nothing else to relate to. But we say within the Absolute, there are transcendental or internal relativities. That this Absolute is not something that's opposite to relativity, but includes them also. But actually, Swami Shankaracharya ultimately, when Janmadasi Yataha is not accepted by him, he denies this Parinamavada, this Shakti. He denies it. Although Vedanta Sutra says, Atma Krite Parinamat, the Lord creates out of himself by Parinama, Shankaracharya flatly denies it. Not in the purport to that sutra. He waits a little while later. And then comes out with it. So you don't really notice. But he actually denies it. So that's one way of trying to deal with this question of the nature of the Lord. Well, you see, everything has to disappear. If it's I alone, then there's just something there, then there's nothing else in existence. And then here's the middle term, there's a creation. And if that's I alone, well, then there's not really any creation either. That's the illusory superimposition. That's Shankara's philosophy, right? Illusory superimposition. They do have to account for illusion. But as soon as you do, there's in trouble. Actually, the way it works is if you account for it, you have a problem. And if you don't account for it, you have a problem. Because it can't be that there's something called Maya that exists, because then there's something in addition to God. And it creates a problem, because if illusion exists, then you have to ask your question, well, whose illusion is it? What is the ashraya, or the shelter? Where is this? Whose illusion is it? Well, if it can't be the jiva's illusion, because the jiva is a product of illusion. So it must be Brahman's illusion. But how can Brahman fall into illusion? So you can't, so they say, well, actually, it doesn't exist. You can take that factor. Well, if it doesn't exist, what's the purpose of getting enlightened? What's the purpose of having a teacher? What's the purpose of being a student? What's the purpose of the Shastras? All these things are illusory too. Well, yeah, some way. So the actual official doctrine of Shankaracharya is that Maya cannot be described either as existing or as non-existing. Anirvachaniya is the term in Sanskrit. It cannot be described either as existing or as non-existing. And the reason is that either one gives them trouble. So you elude the whole topic, you see. That means that when you need it...
Because this means cannot be conceived either as existing or as non-existing.
That's the key thing, it's their counterpart.
Well, it's sort of their counterpart, but this is just a logical contradiction, you know. I mean, this is just a cheating method, you know, to try to account for something that you can't account for. If you're enlightened, the world doesn't exist. You know, when one person is enlightened, everyone should be enlightened. When one jiva is liberated, all jivas should be liberated. You know, you just can't account for the existence of it.
Yeah. Anirvachaniya.
Anyway, that's sort of a little...
Anyway, this is... So Prabhupada says the Mayavadis want to interpret this text, you see, in their like monolithic block, unsubtle, gross way, that there's only Brahman only exists, nothing else exists, means that this world, really there isn't any creation, there isn't any destruction, there's only this inexplicable, unconceivable idea somewhere or other that nobody has, that something's happening. I don't think I can do it twice. So this here we have, and that's why Prabhupada says we have to understand this, you know, in a proper way. We have to understand the simultaneous oneness of everything with Krishna, and also its difference at the same time. So really this is all about achincha beta beta tattva. That's the theme that pervades this whole thing. And that's why Prabhupada put it so neatly in there. There's nothing but Sri Krishna, that nothing is Sri Krishna, save and except his own primeval personality. Krishna and Krishna's energy. He has a spiritual world and there's also the material world. But in both cases, so if he's there, if he's a person, an aham, an individual, see, that implies a form. Prabhupada defines person. To say the absolute person means to have that, means he has senses. That's what it means. You have senses. Senses implies there's a knower and there are things known and there's a way to know them. As soon as you say senses, it means there's a center of consciousness and there's an environment, there's objects. Right? That immediately, so as soon as you say an individual or a person, immediately that implies there's something outside for that person to relate to. If on the other hand you say, well, immediately that, if you say, well, that compromises the absoluteness of God, you know? If you say that God cannot be the supreme being among all beings because that would limit him, as this has been said. So therefore he has to be being itself, just sort of some abstract, you know, pudding. Totally homogenized pablum of substance. And then, so now you've described the greatest of all, right? Just being itself. So we say both. You see, we don't, this is a false dilemma. This is a mistake people make in logic. They set up false dilemmas. They make you say either or, and the answer is both and. It's not contradictory to say that God is both the highest being among all of the beings and at the same time is being itself. He's being itself because nothing is different from Krishna, and he's the highest being among all beings because Krishna is different from everything. That's God. Either we take either one of those alternatives, you've reduced. We're actually looking to find out what is the greatest of all. So we don't. There's no reduction. So therefore there has to be other beings that are simultaneously one and different. So Krishna has senses. Absolute has senses. Senses implies an environment. And then Srila Prabhupada defines a body. What is a body?
A body is a collection of sense organs. We have these Ganendriya, knowledge acquiring of senses, and Karmendriya, little instruments by which we act on the world, like our hands and our feet and our tongue. So the environment comes in on us through our sense of hearing, our sense of taste, touch, smell. And then we act on the environment with our manipulators, our hands, our legs, tongue, genital. These are the active senses. So you put all that together in a coordinated package, you have a body. So that's what a body is. So senses implies body. Therefore we say if the Absolute is a person, he has senses, he has form. Or he has a body. That's Krishna. All that's contained in the idea of what we mean by person. Aham, the personal pronoun. So in order to preserve try to preserve his absoluteness, the Mayavadis wipe all that out. They want to wipe it all out. It's all a product of illusion. That's their claim about this thing. That's not what Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching. But they try to take this very verse and these other verses and play games with it. So Prabhupada says here, I just want to take you through this one argument he has in the beginning. In the Bhagavatam, text 33, first paragraph, I'm going to start in the middle. The impersonalist put forward the theory of oneness in the sense that Brahma, also being the same principle of I, because he is an emanation from the I, the Absolute Truth, is identical with the Lord. You see, I alone exists, so there's only one thing, this principle of I. Right? And thus there is nothing more than the principle of I as explained in reverse. In other words, what he's saying to Brahma is that, you know, like the beetle, I am you and you are me and we are all together. He's saying to Brahma, according to Mayavadis, he's saying, you know, you are me. There's only one I. So that you become God. That's how they understand I alone exists. So that Brahma, you think you're my servant, you think you're worshipping me, but actually I'm now enlightening you that you are me. So I am you and you are me and we are all together. He's saying to Brahma, according to Mayavadis, he's saying, you know, you are me. There's only one I. So that you become God. That's how they understand I alone exists. So that Brahma, you think you're my servant, you think you're worshipping me, but actually I'm now enlightening you that you are me. So Prabhupada says, accepting the argument of the impersonalist, that is to say, that there's this principle of I. Here's this principle of I-ness. So Prabhupada says, accepting the argument means that he's going to accept this premise for the sake of argument. Okay? That there is this principle of I. One principle of I. He says, it is to be admitted, and this is Prabhupada now, not the impersonalist, that the Lord is the creator I and that Brahma is the created I. So there's only I, the principle of I, but there's two divisions of this principle, the creator and the created. That because Krishna is an individual, therefore what is created is also I, an individual. Therefore there is a difference between the two I's, namely the predominator I and the predominated I. Therefore there are still two I's, even accepting the argument of the impersonalist, that there's only the principle of I that exists. Sure, the principle exists, but there's two instantiations of that principle in the concrete being, one the creator I, the other the created I. So they have in common I-ness. We're individuals because Krishna is an individual. We're persons because we emanate from the Supreme Person. This is the same argument that Prabhupada's made before. Why are we persons? Because that from which we come from is also person. But we must note carefully that these two eyes are accepted in the Vedic literature in the sense of quality. Qualitatively the same, quantitatively distinct, and he quotes Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam. They're qualitatively one because both of them are Nitya and Chaitana. You see, here you see in the Upanishads, Nitya and Chaitana, eternal and conscious. So Nitya and Chaitana is singular. Nityanam, Chaitananam is possessive plural. There is one eternal among many, many, many eternals. There is one conscious being among many, 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 many conscious beings. Now we're just saying that there's two sets. How do you make a symbol for a set? Like a
practice, like this, right?
And there's one that's got one member, right? That's God. And the next set has got, it's full. Infinite number, right? So these two sets, one is only one member. One individual in this one. This one has many, many, many individuals. Both are Nitya, both are Chaitanya. But one is in a class by itself. There's another meaning that Prabhupada gives to one without a second. In a class by himself. There's only one God, or one absolute truth. And the other class, there's many without number. Keeps going on and on and on and on and on. Right. But both are Nityana, both so qualitatively the same, but one is independent and the other is dependent. Prabhupada says here, one is the feeder and the others are the fed. Eko bahuram yo vidadati kama. The one is this supplier for all the needs of the many. So that's what we get everything from Krishna, but where does Krishna get his supplies from? See, he's a different kind of an entity. Everybody else is dependent. He alone is independent. Purnasya Purnamadaya. You just keep giving and giving and giving, and he doesn't have to go anywhere else to get. So the way he is the being of Krishna, is a different kind of being from our being. We're hooked on to him. He's not hooked on to anyone. Because his nature is he can just produce and produce and produce and never be depleted. We get depleted. We go to the demigods, they give us more. They get depleted, they have to go to Krishna. He doesn't go to anywhere else. He's in a different position. So the predominator and the predominated I. So there's two differences. And Prabhupada says, in an abstract way, they're the same. They're both I. They're both Nitya. They're both Chaitanya. He said, the Father and the Son are one as human beings or as males, but they're different as individuals. So the oneness is abstract. They got the same abstract essence. Male, human. But concretely, ones, they participate in the same kind of, essence. But there's individual differences. So there's oneness, Nitya, Nityana, Chaitana, both Chaitana. But one is predominator and one is predominated. That's Prabhupada's argument. Even if you accept the oneness, this is how we accept it. So the principle of I is distributed in Krishna and Brahma. Prabhupada turns it around kind of cleverly. So if Krishna is an I, Brahma has to be an I, and they're both related to each other. Okay, any questions? Yeah, Mani Mandir?
If Krishna is the aham I who always exists, does it mean that Krishna is the only, is always one? Is that what is diversity or variety?
Is energy from Krishna. Yeah. Do you understand that correct? Yeah.
But then on the other side, ultimately again, there is oneness. Why? Because everything
emanates from Krishna. Well, because when it emanates from Krishna, it still remains, it's Krishna's energy. It's also comes out of him. He's the material cause. So it's just like, again, it can't be, You know, from one point of view, there's the sun and the sunlight. We distinguish them. When I say the sun is in the room, I don't mean the sun globe is in the room. But where do I draw the line? Here the sun ends and here the sunshine begins. You can't. It's a single process. In one sense, everywhere the sunshine goes, that's the sun. So in the same way, nothing is different from Krishna. But Krishna is different from everything. That's as much as I can explain. Someone else.
In Prabhupada, there's sunlight and sunshine and something else.
Yeah, it seems to me, I don't understand what the difference is.
One thing, was it the Ramanujacharya's Vishishta Dvaita philosophy which first introduced like an internal or spiritual relativity?
Well, we don't really say first introduced, we say it was there all along, before Shankaracharya. But he was the first of the acharyas after Shankaracharya to propound it like that. When he said qualified, vishishta. Well, vishishta means really not qualified, but differentiated, with distinction, you know, the variety.
You mentioned like internal
differentiation. Yeah, well, that's what it means. It's in differentiation within the internal potency.
Qualified oneness means oneness with quality.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it means. It doesn't mean oneness, that then the oneness is qualified. It means oneness with qualities. That's right. With variety, distinction, vishesha.
Is that the senses are absolute, and also there's an object and there are subjects, the subject's also absolute.
Right. That's right. So we usually reserve the word absolute for Krishna. Generally, as a rule, our rule is you accept the dictionary definition. This is the first I ever heard the Don mean is light. That may only because the Mayavadis have used it that way long enough that it that has picked up the meaning. You know, you can do that if you want. You can change the meanings of words. But it's why you actually need to learn the truth, you know, in the proper tradition. Otherwise, you'll never figure it out. You know, usually the Mayavadis will accept secondary meaning. Like, they won't accept this word. Just look at this word, aham. You know, by the time they get through with it, it's devoid of meaning whatsoever. And also, the basic structure of this verse, which is about before, during, and after the creation disappears. So practically, the whole meaning of the verse vanishes. You know, by your sophisticated analysis, you just blotted the whole thing out in order to explain it. That's like what we used to do in Vietnam, you know, destroy the country in order to save it. It just doesn't work. And that's what you see. So it's not for him.
What about the verse in Shveta Shikara Upanishad about the Lord? Like, understand the absolute truth, you have to understand the Lord with his energy. How do they deal with that?
Well, you see, they got this nifty theory that sometimes Brahman is spoken of as an object of knowledge. That whenever they say oneness, you know, that's the meaning that Shankaracharya used the word paramartha, meaning reality. And there's another way of speaking, he uses the word vyavahara, which means conventional, mundane. So sometimes, in the Vedas, Brahman is spoken of in the Vyavahara manner. And then he's talked about as God in relationship to a word. So he's got a double, two layers, you see. But sometimes he's an object of nescience and is described as, and therefore the categories of devotee, act of devotion, worship, God, they appear. But then when Brahman is the object of knowledge, then all those categories disappear. That's how they take care of it. Because they can't deny it. So the thing is, how do you make sense of this place? Sometimes oneness, sometimes difference. How do you reconcile it? And the testimony we have from Chaitanya Charitamrita is that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took Vedanta Sutra and explained it to the Mayavadis in Varanasi, they said, oh, this is self-evident. In other words, everything fit together so neatly and cleanly and without a lot of extraneous elaboration, by just explaining the Vedanta Sutra on the basis of direct meaning. Because the first thing you have to do with Shankaracharya, the first thing you've got to do, he says, Atato Brahma Jignasa, right? The whole purpose of life is to realize Brahman. The purport is that if you realize Brahman, you'll get out of this world of birth and death, because knowledge of Brahman brings release, and that's why it's the highest goal. So what is that Brahman? Next question. Janmadasi Yataha. But by Shankara's philosophy, Brahman is not Janmadasi Yataha. That is Brahman as an object of nescience. That's the lower Brahman. Knowing that Brahman doesn't bring you release from this world, according to Shankaracharya. You see? Because that Brahman, that Janmadasi Yataha, that's Brahman who produces the world from which everything has come. That's not the definition. Go to any Mayavadi text. Look at the definition of Brahman. It will not be Janmadasi Yataha. It will be Satcha Manandam, you know, like that, but not that. So what they say is that Shankaracharya, after telling us the highest goal is to understand Brahman, then defines Brahman as an object of nescience. That's what you have to do. That's you twist things around. It becomes all contorted. So when Chaitanya just accepts this is what the highest Brahman is, then everything clicked into place, it was neat, it was efficient, it all fit together very nicely, all the sutras were explained without strain, and they said, it's self-evident. That's what he did.
There's
also Mama,
Krishna,
you know?
Yes. Otherwise, Krishna is separate and it's mine.
Yeah, it's mine. You have to get rid of Krishna, too.
I've got a question. Krishna, he was touching a little bit on the universal form. So, Krishna does start to have a bit of Yatra Vodhina. I was wondering if you could explain a little bit that phrase. That's important verse of
by me in my unmanifest form, this world is pervading. Prabhupada explains that in the purport here. We're almost time to go. But he explains, is it here or the next verse? Oh yeah. I don't know which paragraph it is. It's 185 in this verse. A text to text 33. It says, I'll just, that he's, you can't see him in the material world. Therefore, he is materially impersonal. Just as the executive head of the state may be impersonal in the government offices, although he is not impersonal to the government house. So he's maintaining this creation by his form, which is not visible to the eye. Therefore, he says, materially impersonal. And so there he says that this is his feature by which he maintains the world. This is just as you can't see. Yeah, unmanifest form. Who sees him? Not very many people. Okay? We better stop now. I'll go ahead and see the